You're listening to the home of cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk right here on LA Talk Radio. You just found the very best in original talk radio broadcasting on the internet. It's LA Talk Radio. We say what we want. You're listening to On the Couch, with Dr. Michelle on LA Talk Radio.
Standard Time, where we talk about just about everything to do with, you know, relationships, media stuff, entertainment people, what they're thinking and doing, self-help, a lot of that as well, some spiritual stuff, some just cognitive behavioral and all that good stuff. Let me ask you something. What do you guys think about all this going on with, you know, superstars in the media? Well, Tiger Woods and Jesse James and Russell Brand and all. Do you guys really think that it's legitimate that guys have to go to sexual addiction therapy? Do you really think that's legit? Or is it just an excuse? I'm kind of in the middle myself. But we're going to find out more about that and many other issues dealing with sex. Now I know you turned up the volume today with my guest, who is Sherry Winston. She's author of the book, her very first book, and it's an amazing read. Wow. It's called Women's Anatomy of Arousal, The Secret Maps to Buried Pleasure. I know you turned up your volume even more, didn't you, guys out there listening? And ladies as well. Well, Sherry is one of the country's most respected teachers about sex and sexuality. In response to the need for accessible and empowering information about sex, Sherry has expanded into sexuality education. She started the development of what has become her major work. It's called the Holistic Sexuality Curriculum. First of its type. Nobody's really done that. And it integrates common and obscure information from modern science and holistic healing and esoteric sexual practices and a lot more. So without further ado, let me get Sherry up on the air here. Sherry, how are you, my dear?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
Good. It's so nice to have you with me today, and I really enjoyed reading your book, Women's Anatomy of Arousal. Taught me a lot, okay. Girl.
Thank you so much.
Oh, that's what that's called when I feel like that. Okay, we'll put a name to that. Whatever. Did I leave anything out in the introduction here for you, Sherry?
Well, I like to let people know my background is over 20 years as a certified nurse, midwife, gynecology practitioner, registered nurse, licensed massage therapist, and childbirth educator. Mm-hmm. And then I transitioned from helping women birth their babies to helping everyone birth a healthy, satisfying sexuality.
That's cool. Mm-hmm. That's really cool. You know, I know you're not doing midwife work anymore and a lot of nurse practitioning in that manner, but how empowering is that? How lovely is that feeling to help a woman bring a life into the world? I mean, that must be an amazing feeling.
It is, and I actually thought it was what I was going to do for the rest of my life.
Yeah.
And I was sort of surprised when I realized that I'd completed that work, and I'm so grateful to every birth I was at and every woman who I worked with and helped over those years, because that's really what taught me how to understand sexuality.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Wow, that's the way to do it, I guess. I mean, you get first-hand experience right there. Uh-huh. No pun intended at all. Can you describe sort of your book? I'm reading here, but I think it's better for you to just sort of tell the audience, the listeners, what it's about, The Women's Anatomy of Arousal.
Oh, I'd love to. Okay. The book has really got three parts. The first part are ideas, models, and maps.
Mm-hmm.
So we can understand what our sexuality is and how it's a part of us and how it connects to everything. Mm-hmm. And that our culture, I like to think of it as, has given us bad maps. Porn is a bad map of sex. TV sitcoms and romance novels, they're bad maps. They're not accurate. They don't help people have better sex. They're entertaining, but
they're not
educational.
Yes.
So we start with the ideas. Mm-hmm. And then from there, I go into the anatomy, because one of the really shockingly missing maps is a correct and accurate and integral understanding of women's sexual anatomy.
Yeah.
So I go into a lot of detail of all the parts women really have, including the ones I didn't learn about in all the years I went to school, and integrating them, how they're connected and why they're there and how to make them happy. And then the third part of the book is about taking that information and making good use of it so that any woman, and men too for that matter, because really most of it applies to everybody, and it is for women and their partners also, but it's really how you can take that information and learn to have truly extraordinary sex.
Cool. Well,
yeah.
Also, I loved it in your book. You talked about five things that listeners and readers need to know that they don't know about their bodies and that their gynecologist most likely doesn't know. So we'll talk about that a little later because it's really fascinating. It's like, really? I didn't know that?
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to share those with the listeners. Little tease.
Okay. Folks.
By the way, if you just tuned in to On the Couch with Dr. Michelle, my special guest today is Sherry Winston. She's the author of the latest book, Women's Anatomy of Arousal, Secret Maps to Buried Pleasure. You, by the way, won an award for this book, didn't you? Big award.
I did. It's the American Association of Sex Educators, Counselors, and Therapists gave it their Book of the Year award last year.
Oh, you go, girl. That's awesome.
Because the information is so important, and it's not out there. We need to know, not even just for pleasure, but for health, you know, both of those things.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's really true, and that's a biggie these days, you know. So, and talking about taking care of our health and STDs and all the crazy things going on, we just seem to be so obsessed with sex. I mean, out there in the media, it's everywhere, you know. I mean, it's fun to watch. I mean, it's movies and TV and the internet and the, you know, magazines and ads and everything, and everybody's got to be sexy. You know, what do you think's changed from like our maybe parents' generation and some of our generation too?
Well, I think definitely it's more in our face than it ever was.
Yeah.
There's no doubt about that. You can't turn around without bumping into sexual imagery.
Right.
And yet, I don't think that necessarily helps people have better sex or communicate about sex more effectively.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of a mixed bag. It's all over the place, and yet the information that would actually help people connect to their own sexuality in a healthier and happier way still isn't out there mostly.
Yeah, it's more, it is more like, I would say, as you described, one of those romantic novels. kind of unrealistic the way that, you know, and sort of unrealistic, and this is what I see with a lot of young women, young adults who come in to see me in my psychological practice. They're just not beautiful enough. They're just not sexy enough. They're just not skinny enough. They're, you know what I'm saying? They're just not provocative enough. And it's like, excuse me, you're beautiful. What's wrong with you? You know, this is what I see a lot of, Sherry, and I'm sure you do too in your practice.
I do. I see a lot of people, both men and women, walking around feeling somehow broken, defective, inadequate. Often for women, it's often about how they look. For men, it's often about performance.
Right.
So, you know, we've all got our issues, and the sad thing is that what people don't really understand is sexy isn't about how you look on the outside.
Yeah.
It's about your relationship with your own sexuality.
Yes. You know, it's about you and your own feeling about your sexuality. And your book kind of helps people figure that out, especially women. It's for women, but it's a great read for guys, too, because I think that they can understand a little bit more about women's anatomy and what they need to understand what's going on there, I think.
And I think one of the big challenges is our cultural model of sex is very male-oriented, which works fine for people who have that kind of masculine core sexual energy, but it does not work so well for those of us who don't. We really need to understand that there are different operating systems, kind of like a Mac and a PC. And some of the buttons work the same on both, and some things are different. And if we want to play with the other kind of operating system, we need to understand what's different and how to play with it.
Yeah. Who's the Mac, by the way, Sherry?
They are.
Them.
Come on, they're easier.
That's it, girl. I mean, it's pretty easy, isn't it? No offense or anything. And all these guys, too, like you said, who want to come in and see me, want to look like Ryan Reynolds without their shirt on, you know.
Mm-hmm.
They want to look like that guy. And who doesn't? What male doesn't want to look like that guy? But, you know, it's good to work out. It's good to take care of yourself. It's good to do healthy things. So that's a good model. You know, that's a good model. And I think young men as well should think about taking care of themselves. But you're right. It's about their consciousness of performance always. And I think the misinformation from, you know, kids, and possibly it starts at the home. Their parents are not telling them what's going on, you know, because maybe they're embarrassed, or they are, and there's just their perception is skewed or something. Don't you think that's what's happening?
Yeah, I think it's all of those things. I mean, I think, like I said, the media does give us terrible maps of relationships and communication. You know, in movies, they never talk.
Yeah.
Right. They run towards each other. They kiss. The clothes go flying.
Yeah.
There's nobody ever saying, "Do you have other relationship agreements that would forbid this? What about birth control? What are we going to do? What are we not going to do?" You know, you just a little bit to the left. You just don't.
Exactly. Yeah. Let's make it real here. Wait a minute. Were you with someone last night? Was it protected? And how do you know? Yeah, exactly. I think a lot of people don't even think about this because the way it's portrayed and supposed to be. And of course, we all have our sexual urges that sometimes overcome that rational mind, especially, I think, of course, dealing with men. Because women have time to kind of analyze things a little too much sometimes, actually, don't we?
Well, yeah, but we've also been known to get carried away. I like to ask sometimes in certain classes I'm teaching, how many people here have never had the experience of waking up one morning and going, "Oh, my God, I can't believe I was so stupid last night."
Yes.
And generally speaking, almost no one raises their hand.
Right.
Almost everyone's had that experience where sexual energy overwhelms our thinking brain.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. It's kind of like being in a kayak in Class 4 Rapids.
Ooh,
If you don't know how to paddle your kayak, you're going to get carried away.
Right.
So we need to learn. These are learnable skills, how to manage our sexual energy and how to decide how to channel it and when we want to turn it down so we can get our brain back online and have those kinds of conversations.
Yeah.
And when we really want to, you know, get in our kayak and go flying down the river.
Yep. That's a good way to put it. Sherry, do you think, you know, like we just discussed, younger adults and teens, They kind of are more obsessed with sex than older adults because it's all new and fresh and exciting and all that, right? And to me, they seem to be more comfortable to have friends with benefits, right?
Well, that's certainly one of the trends. But, you know, I grew up at sort of the tail end of the 60s and the 70s when, you know, there was the whole free love and love the one you're with stuff going on.
Right.
So it doesn't feel that different from some of the things that have been going on in our culture for a while.
Yeah.
But I do think there's more and more expectation and pressure to be sexual younger, to look sexual, to act sexual.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem is you don't have the skills.
Yeah.
I mean, we'd like to think that as we get older and wiser, we develop some of those skills.
Yeah. Yep. We do.
But especially when you're first paddling your kayak.
Yeah.
You know, when you're first feeling the current and the power of the sexual energy.
Yeah.
That's when I think people really need to slow down and get out of the class 4 rapids and get in the shallow water and stay there until they get those communication skills, because that's when you're most likely to make the really bad mistakes.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
Do you feel that, like, more information and education, you know, about HIV and chlamydia and herpes and other STDs, do you think that's helped our society with being more careful? You know, we just talked about jumping into the rapids, the young people just going for it because it feels so good, and they don't know. But does it help? Has it helped scare younger people, or are they?
I'll tell you what information does help, scaring people doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
So it really depends on how the information is presented. And what's most helpful is when we give people skills, when we help them develop skills, particularly communication skills. That is the thing where we actually help people do role plays,
mm-hmm,
and look at conversations and discuss how to respond to different situations. That's the most helpful thing.
Right.
So we need to give them information, education. We need to give them skills.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think scaring people is a very effective strategy. I think it's a lot more effective when we can say to people, the same skills enable you to have great sex that enable you to have safe sex.
Well, you're so positive. That's the way to do it, though. I like that attitude. But I also sometimes am guilty of scaring some of my young adults who are really promiscuous and telling me about all their partners, their sexual partners, and, oh, I got so drunk last night, I didn't use protection.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, okay, let me tell you about this person you may be with. Let me tell you what happens with HIV. Really, seriously. I mean, you know, and part of the mindset of teens and the young adults is indestructibility.
I'll never
get it. It's not going to happen to me. And then, boom, you know, here we have a healthy young woman or man, and they get tested positive for HIV, and their lives are really in trouble after that, medically, because although there's some wonderful medications out there, and they're really working on the cure, it's still not good enough yet. So
it's not, and people actually, one of the fastest growing groups of people getting diagnosed are people in their 20s.
Yeah.
Which,
yeah,
means they may have picked it up in their teens or their early 20s. And so,
right,
these are real things, and I think people need to understand the power of sex.
Yeah.
The power of sex can cause you to make bad decisions. There are diseases that can kill you. An unplanned pregnancy can be pretty traumatic as well.
Yeah.
And there's broken hearts. I mean, sex,
right,
is connected to attachment and love for a lot of people. And so that whole friends with benefits thing doesn't always work out that well either, just in terms,
yeah,
of, oops, you accidentally wind up getting emotionally attached with somebody when you didn't intend to. So I do think we want to let people know of those potential issues around sexuality, at the same time letting them know how amazing and wonderful sex is,
yeah,
and remind people you can have amazing sex with yourself.
Yes.
Totally safe, no pregnancy,
yeah,
no broken hearts.
Exactly.
That's the best place to learn,
mm-hmm,
how to manage your sexual energy,
mm-hmm,
so then you can make wise decisions, responsible decisions.
Yeah, and you don't have to wake up in the morning and feel icky.
Yeah.
Look at that person.
Or in a panic.
Yeah, right.
You might have,
exactly,
you might have done, you know, gotten yourself something really serious, or,
yeah,
you know.
Exactly.
The consequences, so I like the class 4 rapids analogy because, hey, you could wind up capsized and crashed on the rocks.
There you go.
And that can happen.
Yeah. And you don't want to end up in the clinic because you don't have enough money, you know, going through the pain and the psychological issues associated with abortion. For me, I mean, I don't have, you know, these huge, you know, religious or moral you know, objections, because I think a lot of times there are certain situations where people who, you know, don't have the funds and you know, are a certain religion, they usually don't use protection sometimes. So I'm not going to go there that far with that. But I think, you know, you're so right. I mean, the HIV and the herpes and those, that's really difficult. I mean, once you've got that, you're pretty much going to pass it along, or you have to be very careful with the breakouts with that. So Anyway.
I think sex, you know, sex is like fire, right? Mm. I mean, what an amazing powerful tool it is, fire. And it's great when we're using it well and channeling it and containing and controlling and having choice about it.
Yeah.
Not so great when it's burning, you know, millions of acres of forest and then it can be a very destructive force. And so we want to teach people to respect the power of sex.
Exactly.
And then learn how to manage it so it can be a source of joy and pleasure instead of being traumatic, instead of being scary and, you know, and possibly having all those consequences.
Yeah, exactly. By the way, if you just tuned in here to LA Talk Radio, you're on the couch with Dr. Michelle. And my special guest today is Sherry Winston. She's the author of the award-winning book, Women's Anatomy of Arousal, The Secret Maps to Buried Pleasure. It's all about, you know, kind of getting in touch with your own sexuality and understanding your body, ladies. And guys, it's a really good read for guys, too, to understand women better. and what they need and what they like and what they want, what they don't want.
You know, when I was writing it, I was also very specifically writing it for men because I feel sorry for guys who partner with women because we have this cultural, here's one of our maps.
Uh-huh.
We think somehow guys are supposed to come pre-equipped with all the information they need to turn us on and give us orgasms.
Yeah. No.
And then our operating system is so different from theirs, and I just don't think it's fair. I feel sorry for them.
I think
trying
you're
to
right.
figure out how to make us happy.
I hear you. I hear so many women go, I'm just, you know, I'm like, duh, get it over with, or try this or do that, and he didn't think about me, or he doesn't think about me because I like this, and he just wants to do that. And it's like communication, just like you said a little earlier, Sherry. You know, let's talk about what we like. Let's talk about what works for us, and let's share. On either side, you know, let's make it work for both of us, you know. And I agree with you. And I do think, you know, just briefly talking about connections and, you know, we get bonded with people when we have sex many times. Seems like a lot of young people don't, but many times I think women get more emotionally attached and it's just the way we are. It's the way our psyche is and the way we think. I think so. It's difficult when, you know, when there's more casual sex or sex buddies, friends with benefits, that kind of thing for women. I think it's more difficult.
I agree. I think female sexuality is inherently more complex than male sexuality because we can get pregnant and have babies and then birth them and nurse them. I mean, biologically speaking, sex is a higher risk activity for a female.
Yeah.
We do need to be choosier. We are hardwired for attachment because it's an evolutionary advantage.
It's true.
To be attached to the people you have sex with, so they're likely to hang around and help you raise a baby.
That's right. That's really true. Okay, we're going to shift gears here, Sherry. Here we go.
Okay,
we hear about the guys in the media. I mean, mostly men. I mean, I really don't. Have you heard about a woman having to go to sex therapy lately? I don't think so. But maybe I'm wrong. But we hear, you know, Tiger Woods and Jesse James. Everybody's, what a dog, what he did to Sandra Bullock. And Ryan Giggs and Russell Brand. You know, I have to go for sex addiction therapy. And, of course, Mr. Wiener recently had to go. Oh, God. Is sex addiction, is that a real disease, or is it just kind of an excuse for guys to screw around? I mean, let's be upfront with this, Sherry. Come on.
I think it's not a really useful term, sex addiction. I don't really think that the addiction model is the most useful one to have here.
Mm-hmm.
I do think there are people who behave compulsively around sexuality and make choices that are detrimental to them and people around them.
Mm-hmm.
This is not new. It's not restricted to men, although definitely men seem to do it somewhat more. Women are catching up on some of these things. But certainly men in power seem to be particularly prone to that. But is it addiction in the same way that alcohol can be addictive? I don't think so. You can go the rest of your life without drinking alcohol. You don't need to drink or have alcohol in your life.
Yes.
But your sexuality is part of who you are.
Right, exactly. Exactly. It
and
really is.
You're not going to give that up. So to me, that's not really the best framing. And yes, there are people who do need counseling and therapy and support to help them learn how to manage their sexual energy and make responsible choices. So I do think therapy and support and programs and counseling are all great things to have for anyone who has problems with, you know, with any kind of compulsive behavior or who really wants to make changes in a positive way.
I agree with you, Sherry. By the way, if you just tuned in, you're listening to my special guest, Sherry Winston, the author of Women's Anatomy of Arousal, The Secret Maps to Buried Pleasure. And we're talking about all aspects of sexuality in our society and in our bodies and men's bodies and all that today. If you would like to comment, you can do so instantly at docmichelle@AOL.com. You just click on that. It's linked right there to the homepage here on LA Talk Radio, the country's most listened to talk station on the internet. And just doc Michelle with two L's at AOL.com. If you want to have a quick question or comment with Sherry, we can just do it. We can just put it out there. Let's move on to, you know, the whole sex education thing. You and I brushed on that a little bit earlier. Is there an age that you think that children should be before parents or, you know, teachers start telling them about sex education, you know?
We're educating our children about sex from the moment they're born. Mm. Our infants are learning something about how we touch their genitals when we change their diaper and when we bathe them. And our toddlers are learning when we talk to them about the names of their body parts. You know how we go eyes, nose, mouth, and then we skip.
Yeah.
And then we skip over the breasts, and then we go belly and tummy and belly button, and then we skip over the genitals,
right?
Or maybe it's down there, or, you know, if you're a boy, you probably have a, you know, a pee-pee, or, you know, there's some name for it.
Right.
If you're a girl, you might not even have a name. It's just down there.
Yeah.
So we're actually teaching them the whole way along.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we just want to get conscious of that. And look at our own attitudes and beliefs about sexuality because we're transmitting them.
Mm-hmm.
And then we also want to just look for all of those thousands of learning opportunities that will arise when we are in the car and we're listening to a song and there's a lyric that is maybe offensive to women.
Right.
when we watch a TV sitcom and we go, wow, I've noticed in the sitcoms lately that all the dads are idiots and the moms are all smart and competent.
Right.
Well, that, you know, we can talk to them about relationships, communications, our bodies, gender roles, touch that feels comfortable and touch that's uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
Because believe me, we want to be protecting them too.
Exactly.
Right? We want to make sure our children aren't going to get molested or, you know, and we can also talk to our daughters in particular about the sexual, not just the way the dressing, but the movements, the way that the young teen sex star women, you know, whatever, the music videos and such.
Oh, yeah.
Those are great opportunities to talk to our children and go, that bothers me.
Yes. Yeah,
because that girl is 12 and she's acting like, you know, she's 35 or, you know, she's dressing like she's at a strip club or something.
Yeah.
That bothers me because of this. And then, you know, because here's the thing. By the time our kids are like 13 years old, they often start going in that phase where they think we're stupid.
Right.
And they're not going to listen to anything we say.
That's true. It's true. They're not.
So we want to get all this information in their brain.
It's really true.
Before they go through the, mom is so stupid, I'm not going to listen to anything she says anyway.
Okay. I hear you. Okay, I just got a couple of emails here, and I want to put them out to you because this is the listeners. Number one is from Kevin. And Kevin writes, Sherry, I've had an addiction. What? Oh, I've had an addiction to online porn for 5 years. My fiancé made me go to sex addiction therapy. I've been in for 5 months, and it is actually helping me control my urges. So that's kind of a positive response, I guess, huh? That's kind of nice.
It is. Yeah. It is. I mean, therapy is whatever we call it.
Yeah.
If your relationship with internet porn is unhealthy for you and your other relationships,
mm-hmm.
then you need to do something about it. If your relationship with internet porn is working for you and yep. works for your partner and is a great adjunct to your relationship with your own sexuality and you share it with your partner or not, depending on your arrangements and agreements, that's fine too. It's not that the porn is bad.
Yes.
It's about the relationship. And it's great that he was willing to go to therapy and found a good person to work with, and
yeah,
he's feeling
exactly.
better
exactly.
about that relationship, and it's working for him and his partner.
Yeah, exactly, and I agree, you know, and he's obviously working on it, so good for him. That's terrific. I have another email here. This is from Steve. This is interesting. I like this. This is just in relationship to what we were just talking about, in a way, about young women dressing. The way they dress, but it's more, how do you feel, says Doc, Michelle, and Sherry, how do you feel when many women in the workplace dress provocatively, wearing tight skirts, blouses, and showing cleavage, and then when a man says something about how attractive they are, they want to do a lawsuit against the man and the company? How do you feel about that? Ooh, that's a toughie. Ooh.
It is. In the workplace, I think it behooves all of us to be conscious of the history of sexual harassment, and so for men, I do advise landing on the side of caution in your jokes or your comments.
Yeah.
Most women are very happy to have somebody say, you know, oh, you've got such wonderful energy, you know, you're
yeah.
such an attractive woman.
Yes.
Right? Saying someone's an attractive woman is
yeah.
really different than staring at her boobs.
Right. It's like doing
a movie.
And
going,
with,
you know,
yeah. Yeah.
you know, God, you've got exactly. great rack, you know?
Exactly. Yeah. Wow. There's other thing. You know, your energy in the front of your body is a lot more positive than, I don't know. Anyway, no, you're
yeah.
right, Sherry. I totally agree with you.
Yeah. But I do think that people do need to be extra
yeah.
careful in the workplace.
Right.
And the bottom line is, you know, women do want to feel attractive, and women
sure.
feel very judged and appreciated or not for our sexiness.
Right, right.
And so there's a lot of different motivations that might cause women to dress somewhat provocatively, and depending
right.
on the work environment, it might be okay, and it might really not be. I mean,
right.
women also should be aware of, you know, if you're working at a lawyer's office,
yeah.
that might be different than if you're working at a PR firm.
That's right. Exactly.
Right?
Well, I agree with you, Sherry. And I don't want to hear any emails. I don't want to get any nasty emails from people saying, oh, you and Sherry were saying then we asked for it because we were dressing sexy. We just asked for the sexual hurt. No, we're not saying that. We wouldn't say that.
I have to tell, I don't know if you know about the slut walk movement,
oh.
but in Toronto, there was at a college, one of the security guys basically was saying something to a woman about, you know, well, if you dress like that, kind of you deserve it, that sort of thing. And they organized this protest called a slut walk,
yes.
which has spread to many, many cities. And it's really basically going, you know, we do have the right to dress how we want.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone then is responsible for managing their response to that.
Sure.
And they're great because women
yeah.
were, you know, in everything from work boots to spike heels, and basically just saying, hey, you know,
yeah.
we can dress how we want, and that doesn't give anyone license to do anything.
That's
so
right.
thanks for pointing that out, because we want to be really clear. I'm on the
cool.
side of freedom.
That's right.
And responsibility.
There you go. There you go. So that's what it's about, people. So no nasty. Well, you can go for it if you like. DocMichelle@AOL.com. We take it all.
They will.
Bring it on. Bring it on. My guest today is Sherry Winston. She's the author of the award-winning book, Women's Anatomy of Arousal, Secret Maps to Buried Pleasure. She's one of the country's most respected teachers about sex and sexuality. She's founded the Holistic Sexuality Curriculum. She teaches these fabulous classes to really get people real. And women and men about women's bodies and sexuality and all that. We're going to shift the topic a little bit because I just want to kind of put this out here. We were talking about younger people. There was a recent survey of college students. I don't know what college, I can't remember, but, and I should know, it found that only 20% view oral sex as sex, as having sex. So, you know, in your professional opinion, is oral sex sex? I mean, right, President Clinton declaration, I did not have sex with that woman, right? Is that, what do you think, when he was talking about Monica Lewinsky, is sex also oral sex?
For me, when we talk about sex, I include all of the activities we do that involve erotic energy.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, sex is a very, 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 very large mm-hmm. category.
Okay.
And does not just mean intercourse. It means all erotic activities. So certainly oral sex mm-hmm. Is clearly a sexual activity to me.
Mm-hmm.
And the reference you made about the study was a national study, and there was an enormous shift, and we really can trace that to the Clinton-Lewinsky incident.
Hi, thank you very much. Yes.
So, and the other thing that people seem to think about oral sex is they think you can't get diseases that way.
Yeah. Right.
And as a sexual health professional for many years, I can tell you for sure, having seen it mm-hmm. in my clinic right there in front of me, oral sex can transmit diseases and is not safe sex. So
mm-hmm.
That's an important thing for people to really get.
Yeah, yeah. Let's move on to one of my favorite topics. No, I'm just kidding. I'm just being obnoxious because, I mean, I do see this a lot in my practice as well, is adultery. A lot of, you know, people are hurt and they're suffering and they've had, you know, a pain from their mates, you know, cheating on them. And statistics of adultery are really high. And some of the surveys indicate that 40 to 50% of women and up to 75% of men commit adultery in marriages. Now, why do you think these numbers are so high, Sherry?
Well, for starters, I don't think humans are a naturally monogamous species.
Okay.
And I think, in fact, if we were, we wouldn't see those numbers. We wouldn't have all the laws and rules we do around monogamy and marriage.
Right.
If you look cross-culturally, historically, while there are some people who mm-hmm. are very content to be with one partner
mm-hmm.
and are faithful, we do need to look at the fact that there are plenty of people who don't cheat.
Yeah,
that's really
that's
important
right. there are.
To remember. There are people
that's,
who don't.
Yeah.
But I think if we just look at our natural urges, the fact is, even if we're happily monogamously partnered, that doesn't mean we're not going to see somebody and go, oh, yum.
Yeah.
That looks really good, right?
Yeah,
so
exactly.
We are going to naturally be attracted to more than one person.
Sure.
Now let's try and get our options in alignment with that in a way that also honors integrity, which means
right.
you either, if you're committed to being monogamous, even if you desire another person, you don't do anything about it because you have a monogamy commitment.
Yeah.
So you stay in integrity with your commitment.
Yeah.
If you do want to have more than one partner, then become polyamorous, then become
right.
a swinger, then have more than one partner and
mm-hmm.
still be open and honest and in agreement with everyone that that's okay. It's
yeah.
the cheating and the lying that we need to get rid of.
Exactly.
That's what has to stop.
I agree, Sherry. Exactly. I mean, be upfront with it. I mean, there's a lot of organizations out there. There's certainly availability to find other people of like thinking. On
right.
the internet, you know, and in your area. So there you go.
And,
yeah.
and I'll just say, if you're in a monogamy commitment and you decide you don't want to be monogamous anymore, don't go out and cheat. Go to your partner
yeah.
and say, sweetie, this isn't working for me anymore. We
mm-hmm.
need to discuss it. We need to work on it. We need to see if we can it, or we might need to complete this relationship so I can have the kinds of relationships I want.
Yeah.
Cheating is not the answer.
That's
dealing
good.
With your partner, dealing with your desires, and making those conscious decisions are the way to do it.
Exactly. I agree with you, Sherry. Well put.
Thank you.
you know, I was reading some studies indicate that, you know, talking about women's sexuality, that at least 10% of women out there have never had an orgasm. I mean, is that really true, do you think, based on your experiences?
I think it is.
Yeah?
Yeah.
What's going on with that? Are a lot of women just not able to learn how to have an orgasm, or do you think it's psychological, or what do you think is going on there?
Well, I think the way you phrase that is important. Learn how to have an orgasm. Mm-hmm. Most women, we need to learn our path to orgasm.
Mm-hmm.
Most men found that path no problem.
Right.
But this is what I was talking about, how female sexuality tends to be more complicated.
Yeah.
For us, it's more of a learning process.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a lot of women who have not learned that yet, or haven't learned an assured path, who can't always get there, who
mm-hmm.
are what I call orgasm challenge.
Yeah.
And learning really is the key, and
mm-hmm.
that's part of the reason I wrote this book.
Mm-hmm.
I honestly want to give men and women the maps that they need and the information they need so they can follow that to get where they want to go.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I hear you.
But it's totally learnable.
Yeah.
And the problem, I mean, it's like if you want to learn how to play tennis or speak French, you take tennis lessons, you take a
yeah.
French class, but where do you go if you want to learn how to have orgasms?
Yeah.
Well, that's why I run the Center for the Intimate Arts, because
cool.
I teach that. But
sure.
It's not like it's an easy thing to find on every street corner somebody to
yeah.
teach orgasm skills.
There you go. There you go. Wow. Wait a minute. You just gave me an idea for another business. You know, you've got that covered, though. Is a woman's anatomy really that complicated? I mean, you talk about past medical professionals being so incorrect in their explanations and diagrams of women's sexual organs. Is it that complicated, really?
Well, it's not rocket science here.
Yeah.
And yet it is more complicated than the male system. And it is a lot of it is internal,
mm-hmm.
and then there's, but it's not just that. If we weren't so hung up about sex,
mm-hmm.
if we weren't so sort of stuck in our old models,
mm-hmm.
This information would have been figured out a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
But we are coming out of a very repressive, sex negative history,
yeah.
and we have to account for that and the fact that the information about all the parts women have that are responsible for arousal and orgasm,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Of which the clitoris is the tip of the volcano,
yeah.
but not the whole thing.
Yep.
Things like understanding that the uterus is,
mm-hmm.
is part of our arousal and orgasm and pleasure and not just there to make babies. Those pieces of information are not known, not because it's so hard to figure it out.
Yeah.
But because of that historical bias against
right.
sex and women and understanding
yeah.
how it operates.
Yeah. Is there such thing as a G-spot?
There is. I don't call it that because
mm-hmm.
it's not a spot.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a tube of erectile tissue.
Mm-hmm.
Erectile tissue is what penises are mostly made out of.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
everybody knows what it can do. It can
yeah.
go from, you know, small and soft to big and hard. Women have just as much erectile tissue as men.
Mm-hmm.
And what's being called the G-spot, which I call the urethral sponge,
mm-hmm.
is a tube of erectile tissue that surrounds the tube of the urethra. You can
mm-hmm.
think of it like a roll of paper towels.
Yes, yeah.
And the urethra is the cardboard tube in the center.
Mm-hmm.
And so when the woman is not the woman is not aroused in that area, if that tissue is not aroused,
right.
it's like the paper towel roll only has a few paper towels on it.
Right.
There's not much there to find. It's not going to feel that good to play with it because you're basically
yeah.
pressing on your urethra.
Right.
But at high-level arousal with the right stimulation to
mm-hmm.
that area,
mm-hmm.
then it's more like a brand-new roll of Bounty. You know, it's big and fat and,
yeah, exactly.
and engorged.
Yeah,
yeah,
exactly. Hello. Yeah, there you go.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, folks, if you just tuned in, my special guest today on the couch with Dr. Michelle is Sherry Winston. She's the author of the book Women's Anatomy of Arousal, Secret Maps to Buried Pleasure. It's a great book. It talks about maps and models and mistakes we all make about women's body and becoming an erotic virtuoso. And it's a great read for guys, too, to understand women better. Sherry is a sex expert. She's the founder of the Holistic Sexuality Curriculum. So we're trying to cover as much as we can here in our short time. I want to get quickly to, you talk about the five things that listeners and readers of your book need to know that their gynecologist usually doesn't tell them. Five things that listeners may not know about their bodies. Women. Talk about men, but men will learn.
Well, we can talk about male bodies and what we don't know about them, too.
Yeah.
But we might need to do another show on that one.
Or another book. Another book, Sherry. There you go.
I actually have that one partly written.
Oh, cool. All right. Done.
I do. Okay, so we actually talked about some of them. I mentioned that the uterus is part of our pleasure system and not just for reproduction.
Mm-hmm.
We don't seem to know that in our country because we take out so many women's uteri.
Yeah.
We have the highest rate of hysterectomy in the world.
Yeah, yeah.
A third of women over the age of 65 don't have a uterus anymore.
And
women are routinely told that it will not affect their sexual response, and that's not true.
Mm.
So women and their healthcare providers need to know the uterus is important for pleasure as well as reproduction.
Yeah, yeah, interesting.
So that would be one.
Okay.
We mentioned another one. We talked about how women have a network of structures made out of erectile tissue.
Mm-hmm.
That in pound for pound, inch for inch,
mm-hmm.
women have just as much of that specialized, engorgeable, expandable tissue as men do. So we know about the clitoris, but the clitoris actually has three parts.
Uh-huh.
The head is the part most of us know about. There's two more parts. There's a shaft and two legs.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We talked about the G-spot, which I prefer to call the urethral sponge,
right.
Or tube, and that is erectile tissue that's above the roof of the vagina.
Mm-hmm. Right.
We also have erectile tissue that's under the floor. So
right.
we have another wad of erectile tissue that's between the vaginal and anal canals.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And
yep.
we have two more big fat wads of erectile tissue, one on either side of the vaginal opening, underneath the labia, that are called the vestibular bulbs.
Uh-huh. So that's all. Those are the five.
Yeah.
Wow.
And that's off that for a moment.
Yeah. Let me ponder that a moment. And in your book, you do explain more about all that and how women can get more arousal and sexual pleasure from just kind of knowing that that's what's going on there. And usually it's true. Our gynecologists and, doctors don't usually explain those particular parts, of our sexual anatomy to us to understand.
Well,
yeah.
Some of them are not in the textbooks and they don't know they're there.
Yeah. Oh, that's interesting. Very interesting, huh?
Uh-huh.
Well, now we do. It is in the textbook. And we are just about ready to make way for CBS News here, Sherry. But I wanted to thank you so much because now people can find out about those five wonderful areas of the body and a lot more about women's bodies and guys too. It's Women's Anatomy of Arousal, Secret Maps to Buried Pleasure. And Sherry, you've been a wealth of information. Gee, I had so many more questions I wanted to ask you, but about sexual things, but I'm just going to have to, refer to your book and keep on moving on here. So,
well, and people can come visit my website, which is intimateartscenter.com.
Great.
And there's free downloads and articles and lots more information.
Great. Super. Sherry Winston, thank you so much for being such a great guest today. Always lovely to speak with you. And let's plan on making a date for your next book about men's anatomy of arousal. How's that? Looking forward to that.
Thank you so much for having me on.
Oh, you're welcome, Sherry. Take good care now. Thanks for calling in.
You too.
All right. Bye-bye. Mm-hmm. Okay, folks, you got it. It's intimateartscenter.com if you want to get in touch with Sherry, my special guest today on the air. It's intimateartscenter.com. Go for it. All right. It's about time to get off the couch here with Dr. Michelle. That's me. Yeah. If you want to stay on the couch, that's fine. We got more great shows coming up for you here on LA Talk Radio, the country's most listened to internet talk show and station. By the way, I want to thank Talkers Magazine for giving me the award of one of the 50 Frontier Best Talk Show Hosts on the internet, along with our own Sam Hassan in the morning. Woohoo! All right, gotta go. Don't forget to take good care of yourself first. Not narcissistic, folks, because that way you'll be great for other people. Always take care of yourself first. All right, have a good one. Bye-bye.